From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. We won't sugarcoat it. It's been a tough year with a global pandemic, a tense election, and the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, among other Black Americans, by white police officers, which led to record-setting demonstrations this summer. Then in late fall, some hope emerged for vaccines that could slowly bring life to normal. All of this, of course, has affected our physical and mental health, our economic security and ability to work, and so much more. And since COVID-19 hit our state, The Exchange has covered all these topics every day. And today, we turn it over to you. How are you reflecting upon this year? What's a moment that stands out? An act of kindness or connection? A story of resilience? Or an action that you took that made a difference that you'll try to carry into the new year? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 800-892-6477. And to kick off the show today, we're joined by Jack Rodolico. He's a senior producer here at NHPR. At the beginning of the pandemic, he was part of a team that pulled together a live call-in show in the evening called New Hampshire Calling. Jack, welcome, and explain the goal of New Hampshire Calling for us, please.
Hey, Laura, thanks for having me. Well, the goal was, you know, I think back to March when all of our lives changed so fast. And as a radio station, as with everyone, we were sort of trying to figure out, what do we do now? Like, how do we address the world that people are living in at this moment? And what struck us is, you know, the newsroom is cranking out the news stories. The Exchange is having conversations about, like, the news topic of the day. And for us, it felt like this is a very emotional moment. This is very emotionally weighted, where people are scared, they're confused, they are trying to get through it. And it just felt like, you know, we have a radio station and we can actually literally reach out to the whole state at the same time and invite people to just talk about it, basically to talk about where they're at. And that was the urge, the impulse. And then what it turned into was, you know, we would try to pick the simplest, most unifying question we could think of every night. And it was one question. And we would invite people to call in and talk about it. And I mean, I remember, Laura, you know, you have been hosting live radio for a long time. I have not. It was a first for me. And so I had those sort of jitters and nerves, in part because we didn't know, are people going to call? And the first night, I mean, every phone line was jammed. And it was pretty much like that consistently through the spring. And there was clearly a need for people, especially in those first months. I mean, remember, it was still dark. You know, I mean, we had barely passed daylight savings. The days were short. It was cold. And we, you know, people just kept calling in. They wanted to talk. They wanted to check in. They wanted to be part of a conversation. And it seemed genuinely helpful to people. I mean, it was helpful to us producing it. It gave us something positive to focus on. And that's the impression that we had from listeners constantly, was we wanted to be there as a release valve at the end of another stressful day for people to chat.
Yeah, you know, and it was a great compliment to, as you said, the news that news was doing and the, you know, tough conversations that we were having on The Exchange. And it gave people a chance, Jack, I think, to just kind of share in another place besides social media, just, you know, recipes, hobbies, what they were binge watching. Also, you know, tougher stuff like how you're managing your relationships, or if you live alone, how you're managing the isolation. But then in the summer, Jack, as you know, that changed the demonstrations against police violence and systemic racism. And people had a lot of emotions on top of their already existing emotions around the pandemic. So how did you sort of adapt to that moment, Jack?
Well, first of all, you know, the pandemic was the biggest, the reason New Hampshire Calling worked was because the pandemic was the biggest story of the day, every day, right? And that continued until George Floyd was murdered. And so that was the moment when all of the topics that we had planned felt sort of almost frivolous. You know, I mean, let's take another step back. So we went off the air for a couple of days, and but we were still in the pandemic, and it still felt like this is yet another incredibly large emotional issue. And so we thought for a few days about how to address that in New Hampshire. And what really became clear to me was that I wanted to focus the show in on the experience of being Black in New Hampshire. You know, one thing, Laura, this sort of, there's this, it's a fact, it's a statistic, but it's a framing that I hear a lot as a reporter is people say New Hampshire is one of the whitest states. I know you've heard that many times. And demographically, sure, that's true. It's also a dismissive way of describing the overall population of a state that has never been 100% white, has always had people of color here, and has always had Black residents. And so we wanted to focus exclusively on the experience of Black Granite Staters. And so we asked a couple basic questions. What's your lived experience of racism here? We did one show in particular that was memorable was we asked people, if you didn't grow up in New Hampshire, you know, half of the population in New Hampshire was not born here. That's pretty unique to New Hampshire. And we said, if you weren't born here, call in and tell us what it's like here compared with your lived experience elsewhere. Now, whether that's you're Black, white, Hispanic, that was a fascinating conversation because there were all these little subtle differences in the way people experienced racism here or viewed it or observed it. And the way they had observed it, let's say, in the Deep South.
Well, as part of one of those shows, Jack, you talked to someone named Shauna McDuffie. She's a veteran. She works for the Veterans Administration here in New Hampshire. And I want to play a little bit for you and our audience. Here's Shauna sharing with New Hampshire Calling how uncomfortable she felt as a Black woman in Concord.
I don't particularly go to a restaurant on Main Street. I've been there 3 or 4 times, and each time I went there, I was just inexplicably stared at or, you know, followed with the eyes or for no reason. Just it makes you wonder what's different about me than every other patron in here. So when a new voice comes in and, you know, says, hey, this isn't right. This doesn't feel like, well, no, this is just how it's always been. You know, they didn't mean it that way. It makes you feel kind of crazy. Like, maybe I'm the one that is seeing things wrong. Maybe I'm the one that's on edge.
And Shauna, you went to, there have been, you know, protests all over the state in the last week or so. You went to the one in Concord last weekend. How'd you feel? Did it change your opinion about your adopted home now of Concord?
It made me feel hopeful. Just seeing the sheer number of people that were there, screaming, no justice, no peace. They're standing up for a Black woman like myself, for, you know, Breonna Taylor, for George Floyd. It made me think that, you know, maybe things can change. Gen Z, maybe they got our back down a little. They can really change the track that our country has been on.
And it sounds like there's a dose of skeptical optimism, though, right? Yeah, it's, you know, you're hopeful, but you're waiting to see.
I'm waiting for action. That's just
sure.
Kind of how my personality is. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. You hope that white allies, you know, stand with you for the fight, you know, for the long haul. But even if half of the people who were at the protest this weekend continue on this fight, it'll make a world of change.
So that's Shauna McDuffie talking with New Hampshire Calling host Jack Rodolico this summer. And Shauna McDuffie joins us now on the phone. And Shauna, welcome to The Exchange. It's really nice to have you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, and so you said in that clip, Shauna, I was really struck by that. You said, you know, I don't go to downtown restaurants. I tried a couple times and it just wasn't comfortable. Now, of course, fewer people are going into downtown restaurants. How do you still feel about that, going out and about downtown?
I feel about the same. Uh-huh. You know, really haven't had a real opportunity to go back to what life was like before March of this year. Gone out a couple times to places that I have been and frequented previously, and you know, still for those places, they're still safe places and still the same positive and welcoming vibes. But just the interactions with people on a that I've had interactions with previously and new people, I'd say has been different.
You also said in that interview, Shauna, that the demonstrations we saw this summer, including a huge one here in Concord, that they gave you hope. Are you still feeling hopeful, or has that changed?
I do still feel hopeful. This was truly a transformative year for us all, sadly, both good and bad. And I think that the unrest and the fissures that have always been in this country that were finally exposed to those who don't live those lives, I think it's changed people, and it's awoken a rage and an anger to try to make lasting change, not just for ourselves, but for, you know, our children that come after us, and putting pressure on those who can enact the change now has been great to see. I'm really active on social media, and seeing people constantly, you know, calling or tweeting at or commenting on elected officials of the things that they're seeing in their communities, the things that they want to change has been great.
So there's heightened attention on racism and holding elected officials accountable, Shauna.
Absolutely. I feel as though that we have some momentum, and it is there's definitely optimism of this momentum continuing.
Well, in this hour, Shauna, we're going to be asking listeners, you know, just to reflect on this year, how the pandemic has affected their lives in 2020. And again, you don't need to sugarcoat it for us. There's been, you know, a lot of tough stuff and maybe some lights in there as well. How has the pandemic affected your daily life, Shauna? You know, you work at the Veterans Administration. So how's that been going?
It's affected my life in the sense that my particular job, I can work from home. Commuting and going into the office as much as I previously was before March, and adjusting to a new workflow. Also, the for my job, just the effects of the global supply chain system has been it's been really difficult, and seeing the stress that our healthcare workers have to go through to try to provide aid and care for our veterans and for civilian hospitals as well.
Yeah, we've been covering a lot of those global supply chain problems on the exchange for sure. So I know what you're talking about. Your own personal reflections, Shauna. We again are going to be hearing from listeners reflecting on 2020, moments, events that might describe the whole crazy year that you just called transformative, and I think that's a good word. Anything you want to share with us, Shauna, on just how you had to describe this year or a moment that kind of encapsulated it for you?
I'm going to look back on this year, and I've told friends, like, in history class, you know, you read about the Great Depression, you read about the Spanish flu, you read about all of these historical times that have happened to our world and to our country. And I feel as though 2020 is one of those years where there'll be a chapter in a history book, a textbook for a child to see that this was a year that something changed. I don't know what that change will be. I hope it'll be a positive change, but the rock is rolling, and where that rock ends up, who knows, but I'm along for the ride.
Shauna, it's really great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Shauna McDuffie. She's a veteran who lives in Concord and, as she told us, works for the Veterans Administration. And Exchange listeners, it is your turn this hour. How do you look back at the demonstrations of this summer that we just heard from Shauna about and the rest of the year and the way they influenced how families, workplaces, and schools talk about race? We are getting your reflections on 2020 this hour on The Exchange. Send them in by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Jack Rodolico got an email that just came in, actually, from Geraldine in Salisbury, who says, Jack was great. The show, New Hampshire Calling, was a lifesaver. Geraldine says, living alone, I looked forward to the discussions. I listened every night and even called in. Thank you, NHPR. Holiday regards to us, Jack, from Geraldine. And I think that's such an important point because there was a lot of coverage, Jack, of, you know, couples either getting closer than ever or getting into fights because they were stuck together, families getting sick of being together or having like adorable game nights. But you guys also reached out to people who were living alone and who felt very, very alone.
That was my, I'm glad you wrote that up. That was the most memorable show. The single most memorable show we did for me was when we just asked the simple question of, are you living alone and how are you doing? And, you know, I think one thing that happened on New Hampshire Calling was every show, whatever question we asked, even if it was incredibly mundane, like, what are you cooking? We got the same emotional range because everybody was feeling this like up and down, right? Of like, I'm trying to be positive or, you know, like I'm not feeling it today. And that show in particular, the range of kinds of calls we got were, we had young, single people who were like in their 20s, 30s. We had one guy saying like, yeah, you know, I'm working out a lot because I want to date when this is over. And then, you know, on the other end, we had people who were elderly and living alone and everybody in between. And that is something that really resonated because it really gave us this sense of, you know, in our highest moments as journalists, we want to have a purpose. We want our work to have a purpose and help people understand something. I've never done something that was explicitly about helping people feel better as a journalist. And that was so fantastic to be able to be a part of something like that in such a, frankly, dark and difficult moment. And that show in particular, just hearing from people who are living alone, hearing how they're coping, what they're doing to get through, and how some people were frankly thriving because some people live alone because they're introverts, not because they're lonely. And they were saying, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually used to this and I'm in it for the long haul.
Any other surprises, Jack, that came out for you hosting this show?
I think I've been thinking about that a lot. And
yeah,
I think, honestly, Laura, I think the thing is that was then and this is now. I mean, it was so long ago now. This has been going on for so long that when I reflect back on it, it really does feel like a time capsule of the first 3 months of the pandemic. We're now in the third 3 months or something, right? You know, we're 9 months in. And I don't know what the show would sound like if you did it today. I'm not saying it would sound bad or something. I just don't know what it would sound like. I think that was a moment when all of us were saying, this is new. You know, there were supports for people, you know, like those unemployment benefits were coming through for a number of people, not everyone. It felt more doable, I think. This is my subjective opinion back then. Now, I believe for me, I know for a lot of people I talk to all the time, it feels harder. You know, we're entering the winter. A lot of those supports, if they haven't dried up yet, they are drying up. And it is just, this is a long, long year and it's not over. You know, we know we're going to be doing this through the winter and people are buckling down. And it does feel like quite a long time ago that show was and that this whole thing started.
Yeah. Well, Jack, thank you so much. And thanks for introducing us to Shauna McDuffie, too. It was great to hear from her.
My pleasure.
Jack. We'll talk soon. All right.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's NHPR's Jack Rodolico. He's a senior producer at NHPR and also was the host of our spring and summer pop-up show called New Hampshire Calling. So listeners, again, we want to hear from you as we get our reflections on 2020. How would you describe it And is there a moment that really encapsulates the year for you? You can join us with an email to exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call at 800-892-6477. So when we come back, Rick Ganley, host of NHPR's Morning Edition, will join us. But first, as we've been asking Granite Staters to submit their reflections on 2020, here are two. You're going to hear from a listener named Nat, and then from one of our guests on The Exchange, mental health counselor Nicole Sublette. Let's listen.
At the beginning of this year, I publicly came out as non-binary to my friends and family through social media. And that was really scary and it was really hard. But instead of leaning into the really terrible feelings of loneliness and isolation, I knew I needed to do something. And so I'm currently doing EMDR therapy, which is like an eye movement therapy. And it's used to treat people with PTSD or complex PTSD, or anyone who struggles with traumatic memories. And doing that has really given me back control over my daily life, over my mental state, over, you know, my ability to feel hopeful about the future. Because for a good part of this year, I was not feeling very hopeful. I know a lot of people weren't. And so being able to do that has really allowed me to heal myself. I'm really glad that this year gave me the opportunity to do that.
I cannot define a singular moment that gave me hope, but instead a culmination of many moments throughout 2020. My work as a psychotherapist showed me the beauty of resiliency, creativity, and the strength of people as they navigated through uncertain, scary, and even traumatizing times. Witnessing the resiliency and perseverance of the human spirit is one of the greatest and most inspiring hallmarks of 2020.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how will you remember 2020? We're reflecting on this difficult year, and we'd really like to hear from you. So what's a moment that stands out, that had an impact on your life or someone else's? Whether you want to tell us about an act of generosity, a story of fortitude, our phone number is 800-892-6477. You can use Facebook. You can send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Bill from Manchester is on the line. Hi, Bill. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, good morning. My thoughts on 2020 and the culture that has been, well, maybe not the culture, but my thought is that with the pandemic upending everyone's lives, it's like you were building, like your life was a tower, like a toy tower or something like that. And then the pandemic comes along and kicks it over. And yeah, you say to yourself, well, I guess it wasn't all that important because I'm still alive and I still have, you know, maybe you're still alive and maybe the people close to you are still alive, but you still have your house and you're still in it and you could easily rebuild your tower and you can feel very sad that it got kicked over. But now you get the opportunity to kind of have a new fresh start. And maybe you have to find a new line of work or something like that. But it's a new chance to rebuild in the way you want it to really be built and not just the way it had been built through your life up to that point.
Wow, Bill, you have such a good attitude. That's wonderful. How are you thinking you might rebuild your life in, you know, big ways or small ways once this is done?
Well, to me, the pandemic caused a real slowdown in my day-to-day life. I was very outgoing, but seemed to always be rushing from one event to another. And the pandemic was, and the quarantine was a very forced slowdown initially. And I didn't realize how much of my life was just moving from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and always kind of seeking to be entertained or something like that. And with the forced slowdown, it's given you time to relax and refresh and just put everything back in perspective. And I've spent a little bit more time with my family, and I think that developing a healthier work-life balance, but also just, you know, maybe try not quite so hard to cram so much into every single day. But at the same time, now that the pandemic is winding down, I can't wait to go back out and do lots of things. So just to keep it all in perspective and to try and keep everything in your life in balance.
Wow, Bill, it's really great to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for doing the show.
Again, our number is 800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. We're taking your reflections about the moments that stand out for you in 2020, the moments or events that had an impact, or maybe like Bill, you're thinking about rebuilding. Join us again with a phone call at 800-892-6477. And another caller is with us. Betsy's in Randolph. Hi, Betsy, you're on the air.
Hello. A moment that really stands out for me was shortly after the George Floyd murder. There was a group of us that organized a protest down on the Gorham Common on both sides of Route 16. And we were waving our signs for people passing by. And then unbeknownst to us, it was also the time for the Gorham Middle High School graduation car parade to the place where they were having an outdoor graduation ceremony. And so the cars were slowly coming past us, and within a few moments we started cheering for the graduates no matter what, because we were proud of their achievement and their accomplishment. And the people in the cars, everyone first obviously was surprised to discover their graduation was going through the middle of a demonstration, but then most of the people
talk about
were,
a confluence, right?
Yeah, right. But most of the people, especially the young people and the graduates, started giving thumbs up and waving and appeared really delighted that they were in some small way part of a Black Lives Matter demonstration. And even for other cars, I think there was first surprise and then kind of wonderment that people who had politics that were perhaps different from theirs were still very proud of their graduates and wishing them well and showing their appreciation of their effort. And it was a real time where a community unexpectedly came together from very different places.
Wow. Well, Betsy, I'll share with you that I live close to Concord High School and close to Bishop Brady High School. So on my back deck on graduation weekend, I can't remember if they were exactly on the same day, but I feel like one was on Friday and one was on Saturday. And so I got to hear two graduations, you know, the music and the honking and the cheering outside. And I'm not ashamed to say that I spent part of that weekend just weeping, because it was just beautiful to hear people saying, okay, this stinks, this isn't what we wanted, but here we are. So
yeah.
I really appreciate you calling in, Betsy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Joining us now is NHPR's Rick Ganley. He's our Morning Edition host, who has brought us news of this tumultuous up and down year to our listeners every single morning. And Rick Ganley, what a pleasure to have you on the exchange with us.
Thanks, Laura.
We really appreciate it, given that you just got off the air and you've been at the station since O-Dark 30. Like a lot of workplaces, NHPR went mostly remote in early March.
Yep.
How did your workday change, Rick, when all this hit?
It honestly didn't change much for me at all, because we do Morning Edition live in the studio. And for a number of technical reasons, it really has to be that way. You have to be on site. So our producer, Mary McIntyre, does work remotely some days. Some days she is in the office. But for me, I'm there at the same time, 4 a.m. every day.
Yeah, 4 a.m. every day, because there's just so much technical gear that you have to work with, Rick. I, on the other hand, have been working at home since March 10th. And I just want to say a big thank you to RJ Perkins and the Exchange team for really making that possible. Just having fewer people in the workplace to make it a little bit safer. So, Rick, over the past year, and boy, it's hard to believe it's been almost a year, you've talked to so many people on Morning Edition, you know, healthcare workers, politicians, first-time voters. Any sentiments that stand out to you, Rick, about these conversations and the way that Granite Staters are responding to these challenges? I mean, I'm inspired just hearing from Betsy and Bill this morning.
There was an interesting arc, I think, over the year, Laura. You had, you know, people that we talked to in mid and late March and in April, and I think at the beginning of the pandemic, when we really weren't sure what was going to happen, right? We were thinking maybe at first this would be a couple of months, maybe until early summer. then as summer, you know, rolled on, I think the mood changed. And I think there was, I think it was a little bit darker. I really do. And of course, the beginning of school was different for folks in the fall. But I think there's a full arc. I think we've come around. We've full circle. I think there's the feeling of positivity as, you know, word of vaccines and the development in that arena became apparent that, you know, look, this is something, there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. And I think people started getting more hopeful. So I think there was kind of an interesting arc. And we talked to a lot of healthcare workers, of course, over the last 9 or 10 months. One which stands out for me is Joanne Rainville. She's a nurse in Tamworth, healthcare worker who is, she was just so hopeful and helpful on the phone when we talked to her in March. And we talked to her again just a couple of weeks ago. And it was just, you know, it made you feel really good about being a Granite Stater.
Yeah. And let's hear a little bit from Joanne Rainville. So, again, you talked to her in March, but then you checked back in with her, Rick, just a week or so ago. Let's hear that interview.
It's been a while since we talked. I know it seems like years now, but you actually had to close your office, of course, because the pandemic was just really taking hold in the U.S. And you were treating people out of cars and on porches. How have things changed since then?
Well, we actually went out and bought ourselves a tent and set it up in the parking lot. And we called it our MASH tent. You know, you still have to have some kind of a sense of humor. And so at least we could be out of the rain and out of the weather. And people were very patient with us. And when they'd come to have their vital signs checked or have a dressing change or get a blood draw, we worked out of this tent. And now, fortunately enough, we have just in this past month been able to get back into our office.
With the cold weather coming on, it's great to have the office open again, I'm sure.
It certainly is.
Can you talk about, you know, the effect of all of these months of trying to provide those kind of services for folks in town, especially for the folks who just can't leave the house? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some fatigue setting in here.
Well, we're doing well. I mean, I'm doing well. My other nurse, Pam, she's just a real trooper. Our office manager, Marlita, is on the phone so much that she probably feels like it's growing out of her ear. but we are making constant contact with people. Some of those contacts are by phone. You know, like yesterday, I called several people that I knew that had COVID just on the check-in basis. How are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, is your breathing okay? Those kinds of things. The appreciation that people have shown us, it would just touch your heart. You wouldn't think that getting somebody's mail would bring the smile and the relief that it does, but it does. And that helps you keep on going.
Rick Ganley, just give us a sense of the huge arms that that group is putting around its community.
It's just amazing to me the circumstances that they had to work with. I mean, you heard that in the beginning she was talking about, you know, in the beginning in March, they're treating people out of their cars because they
couldn't get off. And we called it our man.
And just to hear what she's saying, how they persevered for 9-10 straight months in a tent in all kinds of weather. And they had a group of volunteers that were constantly, every single day, they had a group of volunteers from Tamworth calling various, you know, senior citizens who are alone. We talked a lot about that earlier in the show today about how so many people are living alone. And, you know, they had volunteers every single day checking in, maybe going to their front porch, knocking on their door, just talking through the, you know, through a window, making sure people were okay, having a nice conversation, seeing if they needed something. Maybe they needed food. They could put them in touch with the same with services that they might need. To me, that was just wonderful to hear about how the town could sustain that for nearly a full year.
What's your overall feeling about how New Hampshire's healthcare workers are holding up? This has been the toughest on them.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. Just like it has been nationally and around the world. Here in New Hampshire, I think, you know, we did not see the numbers that other states saw until most recently. You know, we didn't have full hospitals, thankfully. So I think in a lot of ways, our healthcare workers and system may have been holding up better than other parts of the country. You know, that we're wondering if that's changing as we're seeing the numbers spike now. But I think for the most part, they've held up extraordinarily well. When you talk to them, they're tired, no doubt about it. They are weary. And I think there's a little bit of, you know, worry and wonderment about why some people aren't taking this as seriously as they maybe should. But I think we've held up better in the Granite State relatively speaking, better than a lot of places.
So that interview that you did with Joanne Rainville and Tamworth, again, with the volunteer nurses group, is this part of a series that you're doing, Rick, sort of checking back with people that you talked to in March and
are
checking back? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're doing it in conjunction with Peter Biello and All Things Considered in the afternoon here, where we're a series called Hindsight, where we're both checking back in with people we talked with earlier on in the pandemic, or maybe a couple of times over the summer, and seeing how they're faring now, what's changed. And I think, as Jack Rodolico said earlier, it feels like it's been ages, and it's only been a few months. But it feels like we've been doing this for so long now, and there's been so many different phases. So it's interesting to hear people's thoughts and feelings now in December as opposed to March.
It does feel like ages. We got a Christmas letter from some friends and neighbors, and it included pictures of them doing stuff around the presidential primary and, you know, people in groups and, you know.
I remember that.
And I went, wait, we did that, didn't we? Okay.
Yeah, I guess we did. How was it? 10 years ago now? When was that?
Well, Rick, I want to ask a little bit about your job, because there's been a lot of advice this year from mental health professionals about taking a break from the assault of bad news. You know, they're all telling us stop doom scrolling, you
right.
know, just shut it off. But you can't escape it. You're in that news booth, you know, from 4 o'clock in the morning till, you know, 9 or 10. How do you, Rick, avoid getting dragged down by all the negativity that was the news this year?
Okay, before we go on the woe is me news department, I'm in a nice air-conditioned or heated studio. It's well-appointed. I can't complain too much. I think when you sit there for 4 or 5 hours a day and just listen to it, and you know, of course, NPR and HPR have to report the news, the factual-based news, and the news is not good. You can't shy away from that. But I think once you get away from that, and for me, I can. I go home and I try to unplug it. I don't look at all the news channels. I don't doom scroll through Twitter very often. Frankly, I do not watch or listen to the news very much at home. I don't do. I have to keep up with things for the job, and I will do that for maybe an hour a day. Usually in the early evening, I'll check up on things. But otherwise, we do not put the news on. My wife will sometimes bring up something, and I'll say, you know what? I don't want to talk about it. I do that quite often. If you're about that, and I say, you know, I don't want to talk about that right now, because
I have had the exact same conversation in my house.
And I just, you know, I don't want to do that. And because if you do dwell in it too much, and we've all done this on and off, I think, you do that doom scrolling, or you just, you know, ruminate on the news all day long, you are going to be miserable. You can't do that. You can't do that for your mental health. You have to walk away. Getting outside is a big thing. We've been doing that as a family every single day since the pandemic began.
Well, it is tricky because family and friends, you know, they want to talk about everything that's going on, and you're sitting there as the news person saying,
not going to do it.
No. So luckily the men in my household like to watch a lot of sports, and I just love hearing them talk about it. And sometimes they'll say, Mom, are we boring you? And I'll say, nope, it's great. Tell me more about the Packers.
There hasn't been any baseball this year. I miss baseball. That was a big thing for us. But
yeah,
anyway.
I'm more basketball and football. But, you know, that's okay. I want to remind our listeners that we are taking your reflections, your experiences, those moments that really will, in the end, define 2020 for you. And again, you don't need to sugarcoat it for us, but we just want your thoughts, moments, maybe stories of connection or resilience. You can join us with an email exchange at nhpr.org or phone call 800-892-6477. We got an email from Professor Michael Magoon, who says, I'm an educator. I've been impressed with my students' resilience and fortitude to keep going and not give up or give in. Thank you. Professor Magoon says, I love your show and continue to share it with my students, colleagues, family, and friends. Well, right back at you, Professor Magoon. Thank you for writing in, and thanks for listening. And coming up, we're going to check back in with one Upper Valley family of four about how they've been managing a busy household, major life transitions during a pandemic. As we head into the break, let's hear more 2020 reflections sent to us by Exchange listeners and guests. So let's listen.
Linnea Dwyer, Dover, New Hampshire. I am a community member DJ at WUNH, which is the college radio station at University of New Hampshire. Only students are allowed in the station at the current time, so as a community member, I am given the option to create pre-recorded shows. So each week I create a show and send it in, and it's played during my showtime. Because of this, I came up with the idea of doing a show with a good friend from my college days. I went to college in Sacramento, California, and so I reconnected with my friend Steven, and we've started this show called Melomania. Melomania means obsession with music, and we've been doing this show since the beginning of the fall semester, and it's just been wonderful in so many ways. First of all, reconnecting with him and our friendship has been wonderful, but also just reconnecting with our music, which is such a huge part of both of our lives.
Hi, I'm Alex Perry. I'm the Poet Laureate of New Hampshire, and two moments that really gave me hope this year. The first moment that I really felt hope opening its big doors was when I asked Jodi Picoult if she would be a cameo guest appearance at a youth Semitathon event I was throwing in December. And she emailed back and said, yes, I couldn't believe it. And the words of wisdom about her own first publication that she shared with the teenagers was just remarkable. And in the second moment, I really felt hope opening those big doors again was when I was sitting with Chuck Lloyd, president of White Mountains Community College, and he offered to let me use his college's graduation setup in May. And that made me feel really great because it feels like it better ensures the success of the North Country Young Writers Festival we'll be holding there in May. So all of a sudden, I felt lots and lots of hope and thankfulness.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're reflecting on 2020 and hearing about the moments that stand out for you from this incredibly challenging year. NHPR's Morning Edition host Rick Ganley is with me, and listeners, join us. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, comment on Facebook, or call 800-892-6477. Well, the pandemic has had a huge impact on family life, for better and for worse, and with us now for more on that is KJ Dell'Antonia. She's a writer who lives in Lyme in the Upper Valley, and KJ has joined us a couple times this year to talk about life under lockdown with her four kids. KJ, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Hi, Laura. Always fun to talk.
So who's home with you right now, KJ?
Well, all four kids are home, but the three kids who attend high school here in, we live in Lyme. They attend high school in Hanover. They've been in in-person school all year. It's been a big success. They go 4 days a week. They take Wednesdays off. They've had no in-school transmissions. It's been, it's all masked. It's all the things. But anyway, they're all at school. Then my son, Sam, who is a freshman in college, is here with me.
Hello.
Oh, wow. Hey, Sam. Thanks for being on with us, too.
Of course.
So I've been told, Sam, you just finished your first semester as a freshman in college. Is that right?
Yeah, I finished back before Thanksgiving.
Okay. And what school were you at, Sam? And were you on campus? Were you partly remote, or how did that go?
I was fully on campus at Duke this year.
Okay. You were fully on campus at Duke. And how was that? Like, just describe it for us. I'm curious.
I really can't complain. They did a great job testing. So I got to stay there the whole semester. I didn't actually have any in-person classes, but still the being able to actually interact with my peers and do homework with people, study in libraries was really valuable. I'm really glad that I was able to be on campus, even though I didn't actually have any in-person classes.
Wow, that's interesting. So you got a flavor for college life, Sam, even though you weren't actually attending lectures, all that was online.
Yep, exactly.
Wow. Were you able to do any of the typical college stuff? I mean, I know Duke is a big sports school. Did they have games? Did you have parties? Or was that all kind of, not allowed?
There was no attendance at any games, and there were pretty strict caps on number of people you could have in your room, also that there wouldn't be too much transmission. We did have to sacrifice that aspect of college life, but ultimately it was for the best because we never had to go home. We got to finish our entire semester. So
yeah.
That was good.
And not all schools were in that situation, so you're right. What kinds of conversations, Sam, did you have with upperclassmen about, what it should be like when you're a college freshman?
Well, upperclassmen actually weren't on campus this year, but I was able to meet a few upperclassmen throughout the year while I was trying to meet with some clubs and things. They just told me to be excited about what a normal year would be like. pretty much.
Oh, wow. So hang on. So upperclassmen were not on campus, just freshmen?
Freshmen and sophomores were on campus. So I guess there were some upperclassmen.
Oh, that's really interesting. What about the other freshmen, Sam? How are they feeling? Like, you know, when you're a teenager, you kind of anticipate this and you think, wow, it's going to be great. And then you get there and it's like, oh, okay. No football games.
Yeah. Again, I can't complain too much because we were able to be in person, which is so much better than so many other schools. So I think everyone was pretty grateful for that. But some people did have some trouble following the rules for sure.
Yeah. What about the actual learning itself, Sam? I got to say, my two boys have, they've said right up, I just don't learn as well online. I want to be in class. I want to be taking notes. I want to be talking with the professor. How did the online learning component go for you?
Oh, I completely agree. Some of my smaller classes, actually, the online learning went pretty well. But with the big lecture classes, I really do think that it was a lot worse than it normally would be. To the point where I wasn't even sure if I wanted to continue with the subject online next semester. But
why is that, Sam?
I just felt like the lack of interaction with the professors was really, it wasn't good. Because when you have 200 people on a Zoom call, you don't really ever get to raise your hand or ask any questions. So you're kind of just sitting there watching a lecture. It's very not interactive. It's difficult to work with other people. It's difficult to work with your professor, with your TAs. It was just a lot different than it would be normally.
Well, Sam, hang on with us for a couple minutes, if you could, please. I just want to ask your mom a couple questions. So KJ, a lot of parents listening probably are envious that your high schoolers were actually in high school physically. So they must have Christmas break coming up soon, right, KJ?
Starting Wednesday, yeah.
Starting Wednesday,
they,
okay.
Like a full week at Thanksgiving, so they are going a couple of extra days now.
I was going to say, yeah, most kids' breaks have already started. Are you able to get any of your own work done, KJ? You're a prolific writer. You've got a new book out called The Chicken Sisters, which, by the way, promotion here. Jessica Hunt, news host at NHPR and exchange producer, is going to be talking to you about the new book at a virtual event on Zoom on January 6th with Gibson's Bookstore. So we'll have information about that on our website. But, you know, you're a busy writer. How are you able to get stuff done?
I'm a ringer when it comes to working from home. I had a full-time job working from home for years and years and years before any of this happened. So
you've got this down.
Yeah, I have it down. And I think that my family fully expects me to be working when they're home, and that's just sort of the way it is. That said, having everyone at home all last spring, and also really, I mean, all through the summer, because even though we were outside and people would normally be around in the summer, it was very different. So having everyone eating all their meals and, you know, using all their dishes and all their glasses and all of the other things was definitely, you know, it takes more time, it takes more food.
Putting all those dishes right in the dishwasher, KJ, right? Not leaving them in
they
the sink
all
or on
do.
The counter.
They all do that,
yes,
without
immediately
ever being asked. Yeah.
How are you dividing up you know, the dinner and the dishes thing? I've heard a lot of people complaining about this or discussing it because, yeah, everybody's home and everybody's eating three meals a day at home.
Yeah, they're teenagers, so they do their own breakfasts and lunches. And then, you know, either they clean up or they get nagged to clean up. And then they clean up. And, you know, it's kind of nice that we all eat dinner together every single night. It's you know, it's not always the fanciest. It's never the fanciest dinner. But it's kind of, everybody kind of comes and clumps up and you know, gets a bowl of pasta. And it's our chance to reconnect. And normally, we would be going in all different directions for sports, especially this time of year. We're a hockey family. There is still some hockey, but not like there would normally be. So, you know, we're here. It's kind of nice.
Well, I want to bring Sam back in if I could. And Sam, it's been really great to hear from you just about your experience as a college freshman. Any lessons learned for you, Sam, or just thoughts you're going to carry with you into 2021?
Yeah, it was interesting about seeing different people's reactions. I thought that one of the most interesting things about this whole thing and meeting a ton of new people was that you really got to see who people are, whether or not they're going to put the greater good before their own personal wants to not wear a mask or to go out to parties or something. So I think that I learned a lot about other people that I'm going to be able to carry over. And I sort of feel like I know who people are better than I might have before. And I also just learned a lot about kind of having to cope with difficulty in my classes. Like I had to learn how to figure out things on my own because there was a little bit less help than there normally would be, and figure out what resources were available and how I can solve my own problems.
Wow. What do you hope lies ahead, Sam?
Well, I'm hopeful that next semester I'll have a couple in-person classes. I am signed up for a few, so that'll be nice. And I hope that by next year, maybe I can have all my classes in person, even if we are still wearing masks.
Wow. How about you, KJ? You've written books about parenting and being a mom. And like I said, now you have this new work of fiction out. Any sort of ethic that you're going to carry into 2021, KJ, besides everyone, please, please, please put your dishes in the dishwasher?
I've always been begging that. That's not new. That's so not new. Yes, I have been really interested to realize which things I miss most. And they are not the things that I would have guessed. If you had said to me, well, first of all, if you'd said to me a year ago that this was going to happen, I would have honestly thought it would be a lot worse than it. I mean, on a personal level, I'm not talking about nationally and we've lost people and it just, you know, I'm not talking about that. But I would have thought that it would have been worse for our family, that we would have been crankier and angrier and more upset and it would have been harder. So that's interesting. But besides that, I think I would have guessed that I would miss, I don't know, eating in restaurants. And I do, absolutely. But I think, you know, I miss like going to my kids' sports games and things that I honestly sometimes complained about have turned out to in some ways be the things that I miss. And I feel like it's the annual events that come around. Well, like normally this time of year, we'd be doing massive, there's usually a lot of hockey tournaments over the holiday break. And that's been an inconvenience, but I really miss it. So I feel like it's the things that are sort of annual events that you're kind of unconsciously anticipating that have turned out to be the things that I feel saddest about giving up.
Well, and probably last year, KJ, you were saying those darn hockey tournaments, I haven't probably even decorated my tree yet.
So. Yeah, yes. And why? I don't even want to go to Ottawa. And you know, now I would die.
Sounds good to go anywhere at this point.
To go to Ottawa or, you know, professional conferences where I would be seeing people again. They felt like an inconvenience a lot of the time. Now I don't feel that way.
Well, KJ and Sam, it's been really nice to talk to you. And dare I say Happy New Year.
Sure. I'll take it.
Thanks a lot. That's Upper Valley writer KJ Dell'Antonia and her son, Sam. And again, Jessica Hunt, our producer, will be chatting with KJ about her new book, Chicken Sisters, at a virtual event on Zoom on January 6th at 7 o'clock with Gibson's Bookstore. So we'll have more for you on that a little bit later as it gets closer. You know, Rick Ganley, I did want to ask you about your own family life. You're a dad of two daughters, and you and I have talked about your girls many times.
Yep.
What has this pandemic been like for your own family life, Rick?
Well, I think it's much harder, I think, on them than it is for adults, frankly. I mean, our lives don't change that much. We work and, you know, we have each other and so on. But I think for our daughters, my wife and I both feel that we, you know, our 18-year-old, who was a college freshman, was at school. She was on campus for most of it. She came back at Thanksgiving and has been back since, finished exams online. But, you know, they didn't get that full college experience. And I think that, you know, she really misses that because she was really looking forward to that. She's made the best of it. And I think there's a lot of resiliency there, as we've heard. I think that's wonderful that she's learned to do a lot of things on her own and had to figure things out. But I think she's missed out on the normal experience. Our fifth grader, our younger daughter, well, she rolls with the changes. She's been in school for a lot of it. They just went remote last week, unfortunately, and she doesn't learn as much remotely. But again, I think she's learning what to do and how to cope and how to adapt. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, anything that you're looking forward to doing again? I was so struck by what KJ said, just hanging out at a hockey tournament.
Sure. Yeah. Well, going to a baseball game again, going to see a live band, seeing live music again, being with friends and family, just having, you know, friends over, having a few drinks, hitting the bar with a couple of friends, you know, that kind of thing. it's so hard to imagine that first thing you want to do when they say, you know, I don't know if they'll be an all clear, but you don't have to worry about taking a mask everywhere. You know, I still have that feeling when you get out of the car and you're about to go into the grocery store. Oh, got to have that mask.
There's the mask.
Got to have that mask. And I think that first time where we don't have to think about that, it'll feel wonderful.
Well, Rick, it's great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for having me on.
Today's program was produced by Exchange producer Christina Phillips, and we're going to close out with the voices of three students from Manchester West High School, backed up by some music sent to us by the Della Valle family. This is 12-year-old Joseph on banjo, 14-year-old Molly on guitar. Let's listen.
My name is Victor Kenja. I am from Tanzania, but now I live in Manchester. Being kindness is one of the really important things in life. That's why this gives me hope. I like to be kind and help my sister do the dishes at her house when she was sick. And I also help someone on the streets when she was trying to put something in trash. This act of kindness gives us hope.
My name is Adeline and I am from the Dominican Republic. Now I live in Manchester. For my birthday this year, I turned 15, and this is usually a big celebration called quinceañeras, but because of coronavirus, my twin and I could not have a quinceañera party, so we had a small photo shoot, and we still go to wear our beautiful dress and be together. We celebrate in a different ways with your family, and it was really nice.
My name is Helen and I'm from Burundi. Now I live in Manchester. For acts of kindness, I like to help my mom. I have helped with the vocabulary that I learned in school. My teacher helps me learn to pronounce new words. Coronavirus is difficult for me, but I still have hope that coronavirus will be gone with the vaccine and I will be able to continue learning new words in English.